Right, time for the Israel report this afternoon. Lots going on. Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs and the former director of the Military Prosecution for Judea and Samaria joins us on the show. Evening, Jim Morris. How are you this evening?
Hey, good evening. How are you doing? All is good here in beautiful Israel.
Lovely stuff. I bet it's nice and warm there, considering we are absolutely freezing our toes off here in South Africa on a day where families marked 1,000 days since October 7th. Tell us what happened today.
So really, we've reached that milestone of counting down 1,000 days or counting up 1,000 days since the October 7 massacre. There were different ceremonies around the country. Some more conciliatory, some less so. It's an interesting milestone to mark. What difference does it make that it's 1,000 days or 100 days or 200 days? It's a sort of a random thing anyway. But there is much discussion about it because of the round number. It's like yesterday. It'll be like tomorrow. The people who lost family members and whose family members were murdered and raped. Still feel that every single day. I think the country's still going through that trauma of sending our children to go and fight these monsters. And we're still in the thicket of that fight, even though it seems to have calmed down.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned that it's 1,000 days, and every single day is a day of remembrance and a day to reflect, obviously, on what happened. And it's a significance by virtue of the fact that it's 1,000. But also 1,000 projects up in the north having been completed, which I guess, in a way, if you're a numbers person, it's remarkable that so much has been able to have been resolved in terms of rebuilding and getting people back onto the kibbutzes and whatever. In ultimately, 1,000 days is really a very short space of time when you think about it.
Yeah, and of that 1,000 days, most of that time, definitely for the people up north and for even for the families who escaped the massacre in the south, most of that time they spent in hotels waiting to be given the permission to go back. Once the security situation had calmed down, at least in the south, many people returning to houses that had been burnt down by the terrorists as part of the attack. And that's in the south. Up north, you had the constant flow of the Hezbollah rockets that stopped for a while and then came back with the war with Iran. Entire communities that have spent most of that 1,000 days living outside of their communities, living outside of their houses, living in hotels, really a living hell, which no one really talks about. People talk about the displaced Palestinians all the time. No one gives really a thought to the hundreds of thousands, literally, of Israelis who were displaced from their homes. No, the international community wasn't getting together to provide them with aid and humanitarian aid. That was all everything that we did for ourselves, by ourselves, for our communities. And yet the parity there is very, very clear because it was hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, no flotillas traveling anywhere to bring any aid to those people. Now, when we look at the resilience of the Israeli people, you would think, and I can say it from my own experiences, many people around the world don't want to go back to where tragedy happened. Yet, I think what's about 98% of everything has been rebuilt, and people cannot wait to get back to those areas, albeit the memories cannot be pleasant.
Without question, these are our homes. These are the places that we go to every day. These are the experience that we have. What would we do if we suddenly stopped going to any of the places where suicide bombers had blown up restaurants and buses? There would be black areas all over Israel. And so we do have that propensity to go back, to rebuild, and say it's almost as if it's some type of Holocaust mentality to rebuild out of the ashes, with really that resilience that it requires, and faith that we can start this again and we can build it bigger and better than what it was before. And that's really part of the Israeli societal ethos. And that helps us tremendously.
Yeah, and may the rest of the world see that and perhaps put that into their own lives. Let's move along now to Iran. They've warned the United States and Israel against attacks ahead of the long-delayed Khomeini funeral. First of all, why has it taken so long for this funeral to take place?
Well, I think they had to find all of the bodies to excavate them. And we're talking about Khamenei that was killed already back on the first strike in at the end of February. So it's taken a long time, and then there has to be the preparation, deciding, and then there was the war that was going on all the time. So obviously they weren't willing to carry out the ceremony then. And since then they are really getting back to some type of normalcy. Let's not forget that they're still, whilst we're talking about the ceasefire all the time, Iran is not business as usual. Iran is still suffering the consequences of this war, and whilst they talk a big game, they suffered hundreds of billions of dollars of damage. Their economy is entirely shot, and whether they can sell a few million barrels of oil as part of this ceasefire deal, it's all very nice, but it won't help them recover all of their losses. So Iran has been preparing for this. They have the inherent fear and really the projection of that fear of what they would do or what they would consider onto others. I don't think Israel has ever, and certainly not the United States, would ever consider bombing a funeral procession, even if there are thousands of terrorists there, even if this could be a tremendous strike against the IRGC. That's just not the type of thing that Israel does. I personally would do it, but I don't run the country. So Iran thinks, well, we would do this. This is the type of thing that we would do. So they're now projecting their fears, their own impulses onto everyone else and saying, don't you dare attack us while we're holding the funeral procession. I think it's more for propaganda rather than it is out of any real fear.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you actually answered my next question, because I was going to kind of like say to you, it's like the pot calling the kettle black here, because they are the ones that are breaking the ceasefire. They're firing at everybody, going on and on. And as you mentioned, they are still suffering from all of the strikes that have happened. It's pretty much unfair for them to be turning around, as you quite rightly say. I doubt at all that either Israel or the United States would attack a funeral. I mean, that would just be unheard of. Now, let's move along to the High Court. They voided Benjamin Netanyahu's lawyer's state-controlled bid today and ordered a new vote. Tell us about that.
So what we have here is another intervention of the Supreme Court, not into the actions and working of the government of Prime Minister Netanyahu. That is a rehashing of a situation in order to somehow cover up the real facts. What we have here is the state controller was elected by a vote in the Knesset. The Knesset passed the vote. It isn't only the Likud. It isn't only the party run by Prime Minister Netanyahu, but it rather required an entire coalition to get together in order to make the election. The Supreme Court and its supporters around the country, who try at every stage to undermine the government and to undermine the work of the Knesset and to really take, usurp any remnants of a separation of powers in Israel, unfortunately, has now decided that vote was unconstitutional, breached the laws of secrecy, because the members of Knesset were saying, you know what, I have the right to say who I voted for. All votes are secret. When you go into the ballot box, everything is secret, but you're allowed to come out of the ballot and say, I voted for the Likud, I voted for the Labour Party. And so that's what they were doing, and so the court has intervened again. Really, a shameful decision, which it would have been much better had it never been made.
What is the final resolution of this scenario, do you think?
Well, so it will go back for another vote, and most probably the same person will be elected again, and all we'll be left with is this stain of the Supreme Court again interfering in jurisdictions and powers that it does not hold, and for no good reason. And that does not bode well for the Supreme Court, for the confidence that Israeli society, the Supreme Court used to be a bastion of support. It used to really enjoy great societal confidence. And over the last, I would say, 10 years, the courts, with its interventionist and activist approach, has undermined that confidence, undermined that belief in the justice system to an almost irreparable degree. And that wow. is unfortunately something which has to be dealt with by the next government that will come up, whichever government it may be. But it's something where every one of the three branches, the legislator, the executive, and the judiciary, need to find their exact right places. And at the moment, the judiciary is out of control.
Lieutenant Colonel Reserve Morris Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, thank you once again for joining us and bringing us the Israel Report this afternoon.
Thank you very much, and Shabbat Shalom.